From the KTO newsroom, I'm Jamie Deep. Thanks for tuning in. The Juneau Police Department is seeking assistance in locating a 17-year-old boy who has been reportedly missing for 2 days. According to police, Michael Northern Miller did not return home from school on Wednesday. Police say he was reportedly seen last night at about 11 p.m. in the Mendenhall Valley near Jerry Drive. Police say Miller is known to frequent the Valley location of Bullwinkle's Pizza Parlor and the Alaska Club. He was last seen wearing a black decorated hoodie, camo pants, and a black backpack. Anyone with information about Miller's whereabouts can call JPD's non-emergency line at 907-586-0637. Anonymous tips can be made through www.junocrimeline.com. And Juneau's legendary gold medal basketball tournament kicks off this weekend for the 77th time. Beginning on Sunday, hundreds of people from across Southeast Alaska will attend throughout the week to watch nearly 30 regional adult teams play dozens of games and compete for titles in 5 brackets. Tim Wilson, a Lions Club co-chair for this year's tournament, says for many people, it's the one time of year they can connect with loved ones.
The tournament represents a chance for people to meet in one spot to get a chance to see their family and friends that we don't normally get to see all year. So it's a great event and it's a great way to bring people together.
The first ever tournament was held in 1947, more than a decade before Alaska became a state. In the decades since then, the tournament's impact in Juneau and Southeast Alaska has transcended the court. It includes teams representing smaller communities such as Angoon, Hoonah, Cake, Craig, Klawak, and Yakutat, among others. The tournament's schedule and ticket prices can be found on the Juneau Lions Club's website. Juneau Police Commander Matt Dubois oversees many aspects of a regional task force that investigates illegal drugs being distributed in Southeast Alaska. The task force is one of a few in Alaska that receives federal funding for things like intelligence sharing, coordination, technology, and training for regional agencies to work together. KTOO's Mike Lane recently sat down with Dubois to learn more about Southeast Alaska Cities Against Drugs, also called CCAD.
Matt, you are part of CCAD, correct?
Yes, sir.
What is CCAD or who is CCAD?
So CCAD is Southeast Alaska Cities Against Drugs. That's what it stands for. We also have two other task forces in the regions up north, so Anchorage area and then the Fairbanks area. But as far as CCAD down here in Southeast, our region goes from Yakutat down to Ketchikan. And so we're responsible for that area for Southeast Alaska.
So CCAD cooperates with other agencies and departments. What other agencies and departments are we talking about?
So with CCAD, the task force consists with municipal police departments through Southeast. And then we have the Alaska State Troopers, the FBI, DEA, Coast Guard, and additionally to Border Patrol. And so it's also federal and local and state law enforcement agencies that come together to do these missions.
That's a lot of people.
It can be, yes. It's great because, like I said, it's the strengths of working with all these agencies. All agencies have strengths to bring and different parts and information and resources. It makes it successful because it's like an agency, like let's say you have a small town like Haines or Wrangell, for example. And so it's like in these smaller communities, they may not have the staffing to be able to, you know, put it, all this, the eggs in one basket for this thing. And so we come together to be more successful for our communities in the region.
I would imagine that the relationships between agencies and departments throughout the state and federally is a huge benefit when it comes to sharing the information.
Absolutely. And everybody knows for the most part that really Southeast is accessible by boat or plane. And so our task force, you know, they are moving throughout the region, dealing with those logistics and planning those logistics, you know, to time the investigation perfectly to be successful. And it's impressive to cover that ground and to be able to be as successful as they have been. And so I'm very proud of the team for that.
Do you see a specific trend of illegal drug activity throughout Juneau or Southeast Alaska? And have we been seeing a decline or an increase in drug activity?
Yeah, I mean, what we're really seeing a lot of right now is methamphetamine and fentanyl. And it kind of fluctuates depending on timing and stuff and whatever the reasons may be. We're still seeing fentanyl in the powder form. We're still seeing it in counterfeit pill forms. But I think in the last couple months, I've safe to say that we've seen more of an uptick in seizures of methamphetamine.
Is there a specific way that these drugs, they're coming into town in multiple avenues, but do we see one avenue more frequently than the other?
We know in Juneau how we all get our Amazon packages, right? And so that's going to be the airlines, it's going to be the mail, which are, you know, or UPS or FedEx, but we know like the airlines transport a lot of that stuff to get into our town. But then there's also avenues like the Alaska Marine Highway System. Also, there's, you know, the barge. Any way that you, how we would normally receive goods
right
here in town is basically how they're being transported here.
That was KTOO's Mike Lane speaking with Juneau Police Commander Matt Dubois about the Regional Task Force Southeast Alaska Cities Against Drugs, or CCAD. Tune in next week to learn about a recent arrest CCAD made in Juneau. And we have a clarification for a story that aired yesterday about the Juneau Education Association voting to authorize a strike. Regarding the timeline for striking that was outlined, a representative with JEA says the soonest the union could decide to strike is April 8th. The school district interprets that timeline differently. Alaska's rural school districts recruit heavily from abroad to fill teaching positions in their classrooms. But in the fall, President Donald Trump virtually shut that labor market down with a huge increase in the fees employers must pay for the visa those international workers need. In Kodiak Island Borough's public schools, nearly 1 in 5 current teachers have a visa. Now it's recruitment season for next school year, and the district's top administrator tells KMXT's Davis Hovey international teachers are not being recruited.
Kodiak Island Borough School District Superintendent Cindy Mika says 26 of her teachers hold H-1B visas, which let highly skilled foreigners work in the United States for up to 6 years and can lead to permanent residence.
Not having the ability to hire internationally for Kodiak could mean the difference in having a teacher in front of students and not having a teacher in front of students next year.
Current teachers are not affected by Trump's new $100,000 visa fee, which is 20 times higher than the old fee. But it's too much for the district and others across the state to cover.
We actually are not currently recruiting from the Philippines for the first time since I moved here 4 years ago, because we cannot afford the $100,000 fee that is now imposed at the embassy in order to obtain our visas.
President Trump claimed in his executive order that the high fee will address employers' abuse of the system to undercut American workers. But part of the reason the school district started hiring teachers from the Philippines several years ago was because American candidates stopped applying. Mika says school districts used to find hundreds of potential teachers at in-person state job fairs.
The last job fair in the state was 2 years ago. We had the same 53 districts, and two teachers walked in the door of that job fair. Two applicants.
H-1B visa teachers fill crucial roles across the Kodiak Island Borough School District, such as the high school music orchestra teacher, special education teachers, and teaching staff in rural communities like Old Harbor, for example. Assistant Superintendent Kim Saunders says this year, for the first time, the district retained all of its rural school teachers, thanks in part to the international recruits. U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski introduced a bill last week to exempt public schools across the country from paying the $100,000 fee. Saunders appreciates Murkowski's support, but even if the bill does pass quickly, she says it would not help recruiting that's happening now.
This would be a longer-term solution that Murkowski is proposing, which we're very grateful for, but you're really talking about an FY28 solution, not a 27 solution.
She said that KIBSD is looking at alternatives. In the meantime, the district has started sending out contracts to its non-tenured teachers and is trying to determine its staffing needs for next school year. Statewide, 573 educators are international teachers on various visas, according to Lisa Parody, the executive director of the Alaska Council of School Administrators. That's 8.5% of Alaska's teaching workforce. She says in some rural districts, more than half of the teachers are serving on visas. Parody told state lawmakers earlier this month that districts have been forced into an impossible choice.
Pay millions in visa fees and cut student programs, or go without teachers and leave classrooms uncovered. Neither option is acceptable for our students and children in Alaska.
There are also 11 international teachers in the Kodiak Island Borough School District who need to renew their visas this year. It's unclear how the ongoing government shutdown at the Department of Homeland Security will affect that process. Reporting in Kodiak, I'm Davis Hovey.
And 9 seismic stations in Alaska are fully funded again after a new agreement with federal and state agencies, including one near Juneau. 5 of the stations are in the Aleutian and Pribilof Islands, a highly active seismic region. The deal between the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration and the University of Alaska Fairbanks took effect on March 1st. The National Weather Service will now purchase seismic data from the university's Alaska Earthquake Center directly under contract, rather than through a grant which got defunded last year. Curtis Marshall directs the National Weather Service's Commercial Data Program. He said in an email to KUCB that this change, quote, ensures consistency and efficiency, and it also ensures stable budget resources, end quote. The 5 Aleutian and Pribilof stations sit near Unalaska, Atka, Nikolski, False Pass, and St. Paul Island. Greg Peters is project manager for the Aleutian and Pribilof Islands Local Emergency Planning Committee in Unalaska. He said in an email to KUCB that the upgrade matters enormously for remote communities in the region. That's because a nearby earthquake in the Aleutians can send a tsunami wave ashore to communities in just minutes. Peters also said the investment goes beyond emergency response. He said the stations also support the scientific research that helps refine hazard models and improve preparedness planning across the region. And in Juneau, it is currently 32 degrees with light snow, and winter weather continues for the first day of spring. This is KTOO. Thanks for tuning in. For more news, head to ktoo.org.